Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Welcome into the Rockies Insider. I am your Rockies Insider, Patrick Lyons, with a lot to get to today. Good history, bad history coming up this week, potentially for the Rockies in their final handful of games for the 2025 slate. Some interesting notes on the Seattle Mariners and some postseason notes. We got a couple teams in. We've got some incredible races right now. Some notes on Nolan Arenado as well. But by the time you're hearing this, there could be more history that has been made by this team, by the Colorado Rockies. They've entered the final six games of the season, having allowed 988 runs. So 12 runs over the final six games of the season. Yeah, these are more pitchers' ballparks, but Rockies, unfortunately, do not have very talented pitching. So currently they do have the second most amount of runs allowed in a single season in franchise history. The 1999 club allowed 1,028 runs. I don't think there's really any way that they hit that. I mean, look, there are ways where a couple 17-run outbursts by their opponents is going to do that. But that record is probably safe. But what's interesting is in the history of baseball, only 32 teams have ever allowed 1,000 runs. And since 1940, there have been only two, the 99 Rockies and the 1996 Detroit Tigers. So Colorado could be making some more bad history. What about their road record? We already know that they set the franchise low for most losses at home, that being 56 L's. Well, currently they have 57 on the road, 18-57. So yeah, they've been worse on the road than at home. They almost always are. But the franchise low for most losses came in 2014, 60 losses. The 2023 club lost 59. So three wins this week over the next 6 days means three losses. That ties the franchise record. Four makes it the worst ever on the road. That very well seems to be a probability and not any kind of record that I think anyone's really thinking about. This idea that they were going to at least tie for the most losses in modern era baseball history, there was a very good chance of that. And so that was something they considered, that it's really going to take something drastic to turn things around. And they had that spell of strong play that was enough to sustain them and keep them from losing 121 or owning the record unto themselves with 122. But this most losses on the road in franchise history is, you know, not of, you know, major importance. We would be looking at worst record ever at home for this franchise and worst ever record on the road. Absolutely awful. And to think we got 103 losses and 101 losses the last two seasons. And what changed after those 2 years? Will anything change after this one? It's got to happen, right? And a week from now, we should have a different front office? Should, but will that happen? I have talked to some folks that have the same doubts as I do. Yes, there's things that it feels like they have to do this. They have needed to make serious and drastic changes for a long while. And yet they hadn't made those changes before. They've started to make some changes recently, but will they make more? Will they make more necessary changes? Good history. Let's get to the good stuff. And if we're talking good, we're talking good, man. Hunter is 2 RBI entering this final week of becoming only the 6th catcher in baseball history in his age 25 season or younger with at least 30 homers and 90 RBI. Think of it through that lens. 25 years old or younger as a catcher, hitting 30 homers, 90 RBI. Rudy York did it twice. Joe Torre, who was a borderline Hall of Fame player, what he did as a manager ended up getting him into the Hall of Fame. Torre did it once. Johnny Bench, probably the greatest catcher of all time, 1970 and 1972. Mike Piazza only did it once. And randomly, Gary Sanchez, who's still kicking around, 2017. So not a huge list of guys you're saying, man, these are some of the all-time greats. We have two all-time greats in Johnny Bench, Mike Piazza, two incredibly talented players who had solid careers in Rudy York and Joe Torre. Joe Torre way more so. And then a guy that I don't think anyone's still waiting for him to come around, but he never really lived up to the hype of at least that 2017 season in Gary Sanchez. Some more good history to keep an eye on this week. Could the Rockies have three different players reach 20 stolen bases in the same year? Well, believe it or not, there's only been 36 times in this franchise's history, in 33 seasons, this is the 33rd year, that we've seen 20 stolen bases out of a Rocky. So almost like once a season. 20 stolen bases, look, there are periods in baseball history where, especially during the steroid era, or sort of the tail end, where stolen bases just didn't have a ton of value. And we know that in years past, the Rockies haven't stolen a ton, but all it takes is one player to reach 20. So on average of one a season, no players stole 20 bases in the five seasons between 2002 and 2006. That was the longest drought. No one did it in 16 and 17, but three Rockies are very close. They are one game away from reaching 20 stolen bases. Tyler Freeman with 18, Jordan Beck with 18, Brenton Doyle with 17. In fact, they are the first trio of Rockies to swipe 17 or more bags in a season since 2021, when you had Garrett Hampson, Trevor Story, and Raimel Tapia. Brenton Doyle, if he's able to get three more, would reach 20 stolen bases for the third consecutive season, doing it in each of his first three campaigns. He would become only the fourth Rocky ever with 20 steals in three different seasons. Trevor Story did it three times, and the only two players to ever do it more, they both did it four times, Carlos Gonzalez and Eric Young Sr. So in 3 years, Brenton Doyle putting his stamp as the greatest center fielder in Rockies history and one of the greatest base stealers in Rockies history in his first 3 years. Pretty darn good. Do need to note that Tyler Freeman was scratched from Tuesday night's game with lower back tightness. So this could throw out hopes of two more steals for him, but we will see how this shakes out. It could just be precautionary so that it doesn't become something worse. Who knows? Maybe he wakes up this morning, Wednesday morning, feels great, and does get those two. Only the 1996 and 97 team had three players with 20 stolen bases in the same season. So that would be pretty historic at a time in which the Rockies really haven't been stealing a ton of bases. They definitely seem to do it a lot more this year and a lot more under Warren Schaefer than Bud Black, who almost gave the stop sign, the permanent stop sign to most guys on the bases. So that would be interesting for them to have three reaching 20 stolen bases in consecutive seasons. That's pretty darn good. Now, this current club is tied for the second most amount of Rockies with 17 steals in a season with 2021, 2013, in 1997, only the 96 squad had more players to accomplish at least 17 stolen bases. Dante Bichette, Ellis Burks, Andre Scalarraga, Quinton McCracken, Larry Walker, Eric Young Sr. That's right, six players stole 17 bases or more. And no, that 96 squad did not make the postseason. Brenton Doyle is entering the week 69 for 81. That's 85.2%. successful stolen base rate in his career. He's one of only two Rockies to have at least 65 stolen bases with a success rate over 85%. The other, Willie Taveras, 101 steals, 16 times, caught stealing 86.3%. So Brenton Doyle doing the quality, doing the quantity part of taking an extra base via the steal. Nolan Arenado. Yeah, he's back in the news again. Nothing too crazy, but it was interesting. On Sunday, it was the final home game for the Cardinals at Busch Stadium. And boy, oh boy, you think that attendance at Coors Field has taken a dip? And well, frankly, it hasn't very much. It has gone down. But that decrease in attendance at Coors Field, should the numbers end up staying the same, we're going to have 13 teams that experience a dip in attendance. Tampa Bay was 29th in terms of change in attendance. They dipped by 6,800. We know why, playing in a minor league ballpark. The A's also playing in a minor league ballpark, but they were treated like a minor league team last year at the Oakland Coliseum. They've only dipped by a little over 200 per game. That's it, just 200 per game. We'll see how they end up finishing up as they play their final six games of the season in West Sacramento. But Colorado was 23rd in terms of change in attendance, dipping 1,674 per game. And really, that number is a bit higher than that. Yeah, I think it would be a bit higher than that. The math brain is not working right now as I talk. One of the things that I mentioned on one of the last 2 days' shows is that the Rockies consider, and they're right, they had only 80 dates. They played 81 games at home, but they only had 80 dates. So the number is skewed. They are going to actually be at 30,000 for their average per game attendance. So I can't figure out right now if that number is going to increase or decrease. But nevertheless, as bad as that dip was, or as notable of a dip that was, St. Louis experienced nearly 8,000 less fans per game, 628,000. That's wild. I wonder where that ranks in the last 10 years or so in terms of change in attendance. What's even wilder is that last year in 2024, they were 30th in terms of attendance change. They dipped down over 4,000. So in 2023, they averaged 40,000 fans per game. And this year, 2 years later, they averaged only 27,000. 13,000 less people went to see a game in St. Louis than 2 years ago. That's a notable change. But that Sunday crowd, Cardinals go out with a win. They actually take 2 of 3 from the Brewers, 32,000 in attendance. And Nolan Arenado was not originally supposed to start this game, or was not in the starting lineup, then was a late addition. And immediately in the first inning, Ollie Marmol came out and removed him from the game, got a nice applause from the crowd. Is this the end of Nolan Arenado's time in St. Louis? Katie Wu of The Athletic said on X, quote, originally out of the starting lineup for the home finale, Nolan Arenado is a very last-minute addition. He'll play third, bat sixth, in what could be, and frankly should be, his final game as a Cardinal at Busch Stadium. $27 million next year, $15 million still due to him in 2027. He is on his way out, and I'm frankly rather surprised how much his productivity has dipped in the last 2 years. I mean, even this year, sure, he had some time on the IL, you know, just barely over 100 games played, but at 1.2 wins above replacement, that's not bad. It is bad if you're making $27 million, of course. You know, still an above-average defender at third base. Is there another 20 home run season in there if he is healthy and maybe has the right kind of guys in the lineup behind him or around him? Yeah, I think so. You know, these last 2 years were really hard on his productivity. 2024, he was at 2.5 wins above replacement. 2023, was only 2.2, but the offensive numbers were better. 10 more home runs, 26 homers, 93 RBI, and you know, had a higher OPS plus. Not really sure why that productivity dipped. I think it was more for what he was able, or I should say was not able, to do defensively. So that's one of the reasons why his value was down, wins above replacement. But if you look at how long Max Muncy has stuck around and how many opportunities Justin Turner continues to get, I still see two more solid seasons out of Nolan Arenado the next 2 years. As you know, he goes for 400 home runs. I don't know that he reaches that. He's at 351 at the time of recording. That's going to take essentially 225 homer seasons. Okay, I'll give you one of those. Can he make up the other 25? How about a 13 homer season and then a 12 homer season after that? Okay. But then he's got to stick around and play through to his age 37 season. It's possible. It's just that his time in St. Louis looks to be up. I think the Cardinals are just going to want to dump his contract. They're going to have to pick up a big chunk because we're talking $42 million guaranteed for a player that might not have a ton of upside, at least offensively, defensively, statistically. Let me put it that way, because I think you want a veteran like him around who wants to win, who's hard-nosed, who does expect a lot out of his teammates and sets a very high bar. It's something he learned from Troy Tulowitzki. Would Arenado want to return to Colorado under the right circumstance? And really, it's not his circumstance. It would be the Rocky circumstance of, look, Cardinals, if you want to pay down some of that deal or let us off the hook for what we owed you, then yeah, sure, why not? We'll bring him back for one last swan song. Is Arenado going to want to be...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Up for answering questions about the futility of this franchise? I don't know. Or rehashing everything that went down in 2020 and before the 2021 season? I would doubt it, but I think that's more of a topic to talk about this offseason. Let's get to the Mariners notes. Look, they swept the Astros over the weekend in Houston to take over first place. And the Mariners are looking to capture the AL West title for the first time since 2001. If you weren't around then or you weren't cognizant of baseball, the Mariners in 2001, they were victorious 116 times. They tied a modern era for most wins, set an American League record for most wins, a record they still owned. And there were a lot of career seasons that year. Mike Cameron, Brett Boone. This was soon after getting rid of Ken Griffey Jr. But the biggest thing that is remembered from 2001 is the emergence, is the appearance, is the debut stateside of Ichiro Suzuki, Rookie of the Year, AL MVP. Mariners looking to do that, looking to go back to winning the AL West. They entered this series 14-1 over their previous 15 games, something that they had only done only four other times. And they'd won eight games at home at T-Mobile Park. So they're just clutch. And we get to see Cal Raleigh for the next, you know, two more days after Tuesday night. So that's the cherry on top of essentially a very gross-tasting piece of pie. So enjoy that while you can, because this is it. We're getting towards the end. And now we're getting some of the best baseball of the season. I know a lot of folks just were ready to wrap this thing up in early August, especially after how aggressive some teams were active at the trade deadline and how much certain teams sold off. It was very clear who was in and who was out. The Angels tried to be in, and yet they were actually out. They didn't know they were out, but that's the Angels for you. The Guardians sold off, and yet they currently have a 60% likelihood of winning the American League Central. They won a very dramatic game on Tuesday night, 5-2 over Detroit in this three-game set. Cleveland against Detroit, and now Cleveland, same record as the Tigers, but they do now control their dynasty. Scary moment when David Fry, fastball, a little bit up and in, went to try to bunt it off Tarik Skubal. The ball fouled off, hit him right in the face. Skubal's reaction was a reaction. I mean, he flung his hat off, threw his mitt down, was just disgusted in the injury that is taking a baseball to the face. So the humanity showing up there for Tarik Skubal and for everybody in that ballpark. We do hope that David Fry ends up being all right. But the Guardians left for dead, coming back. And, you know, credit to them. You know, sure, there's a knock on the Tigers for collapsing here, but I think even more credit has to go to the Cleveland Guardians. And hey, maybe Nolan Jones gets himself some October baseball after being cast aside so early in the season, so close to opening day. That would be a nice thing to see for him. Cincinnati also entered this week controlling their fate. I've seen odds that give the Reds a 58.3% likelihood of making the playoffs over the Mets, who have absolutely collapsed. The Reds have not been world beaters. They really haven't been. They've been steady all season long. They've been better in the second half. But the Mets have just fallen apart. And remember, one of the reasons why I picked the Reds to go to the postseason was because of Terry Francona. And if you are in a pennant race and you are in a hunt for one of the final wild card spots, who would you want managing your team more than Terry Francona? Unbelievable to see them playing relevant games late in the season and with a chance to do it. Arizona is right there as well. They sold off some major pieces. In fact, you're seeing two of those major pieces right now in this Rockies Mariner series. Talking about Eugenio Suarez and Josh Naylor, and yet the Diamondbacks continue to do it. This is a winning organization. They get to the World Series in 2023. Sure, they were not on paper the best team that season, maybe not even the best team that postseason. They sure as heck were exciting, but they get themselves to the World Series, lose in five games, miss out on the postseason last year, just barely. They might miss out again this year, but for a team that sold and said, we need to live to fight another day, we need to get something for our expiring assets and try to get the most and not just sit on our hands and say, well, we can give this guy a qualifying offer and then we'll get a draft pick that won't really be able to help us for about 4 or 5 years, but we'll get something for it. No, they said, we want pieces that can help us out next year, maybe this year, but mostly next year and beyond that, because we've got a window right now, or we have a chance, or waiting on that lottery ticket that is a draft pick can be a fool's errand. And so the Diamondbacks staying alive, so impressive to see that. The Padres already clinched a postseason berth, only the second time in franchise history that they have made back-to-back postseasons. The Giants hanging in there. They're a little too far back, but again, another team that continues to fight and scrap. And, you know, this is a team that has a good core, has a potential to be a very good core. We're going to see Bryce Eldridge this weekend. I'm excited for that. But with so many players returning next year and the potential for Justin Verlander to stick around, I believe he has said that he would love to return to San Francisco. He's pitched a lot better here the final 2 months of the season. You could see him coming back in San Francisco saying, hey, let's keep this momentum. Sure, maybe it was too little too late. We didn't do enough. I mean, they're 2-8 over their last 10 games. So, all right, we kind of fell apart, but let's make it last these final few games so that we go into the postseason, or we go into the offseason with a little bit of momentum to get ourselves jump-started at the beginning of 2026. They're thinking about that. The Diamondbacks have been thinking about that. The Giants have been thinking about that. There are other teams thinking about, yes, this season, is a failure, but we can start planning for next year now. We can start learning things now, not kicking the can down the road, not saying, these things will sort themselves out. Let's try to sort it out now. Let's try to figure out some of the questions for 2026 at the end of 2025. I think the Rockies are trying to do that just a little bit. I don't know that they've answered any of the big questions, but I think teams like the Giants and the Diamondbacks have certainly answered a lot more of those bigger questions for themselves going forward, because they are relevant, because they should have been in the hunt to start the season. And so it's important for them to figure out what's going on. It's important for the Rockies to do that too, but they are just so far from being in the middle of the pack, maybe even being at the top of the bottom of the pack, wherever that may be, right? Is that the Pirates? You know, is that the Marlins? Is that the Nationals? Those teams that, again, you expect them to be bad every year, but maybe they can do some interesting things, like the Pirates the previous two seasons with really solid starts before falling apart very quickly. Like, okay, there was something there. Maybe if we add a couple of the right pieces, but the Rockies are very far from that. At Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons MLB on X and Blue Sky. Head over to the Rockies Insider channel on YouTube, the Rockies Insider newsletter as well over on Substack. Appreciate you dropping by. Appreciate all the momentum you've provided me with here today. But unfortunately, that kind of momentum, it's only as good as my next show. So, of course, I'll talk to you then.